Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today is Matt Smith. In the 13th episode of the Coaching Corner with Matt Smith, Matt will break down the last match for Fulham against Preston North End from a coaching perspective. Later on, we're going to be introducing a new segment called You're the Head Coach, and Matt will discuss what he would do if he was the head coach for Fulham. I'm looking forward to doing that. We will also have a little discussion on the interview that was done yesterday with Cottage Talk with Wayne Vesey from Football Insider. Definitely going to talk to Matt about that. But before we do anything, I have to welcome him back to the show. Matt, how you doing?
I'm good, Russ. Very earth-changing, not necessarily earth-changing, but club-changing news and stuff like that. So interested to kind of go into some stuff and try some new twists to the show. So I'm real excited.
Yeah, listen, I'm real excited to be introducing this new segment and look at it again from a different perspective, from a coaching perspective, from your perspective, you looking at the club, what you would do, and I'll be fascinated with your thoughts on that. We're going to be ending the show doing that because I definitely want to spend some time talking about that and also looking at the Preston North End match last Saturday. Definitely want to get to that. But, Matt, we have to start with our discussion yesterday that I had along with my co-hosts David Hockey and Mike Gregg. We actually had on Wayne Vesey from Football Insider, who shared with us some information about what is going on with the club. You've listened to the interview now. What do you take away from it?
Well, I think that, you know, there's a lot of things that go on behind closed doors that you know, as much as people want to think that they know what's going on in the club as fans, that we just don't get to see as fans. And we just don't, we are privy to a lot of information and kind of why a lot of decisions happen. And, you know, between the, you know, in conversations between the higher ups, I mean, unfortunately, we can't be flies on the wall in those conversations and really kind of, be able to see it from their perspective. Because I think at the end, you know, really what they're trying to do is they have a, you know, just usually the higher ups have a long term view and are committed to that view, and I think sometimes fans and I get this way as well, have a view of wanting instant gratification. And I think that's just, you know, not only is it kind of the world we live in where you can only kind of see 6 inches in front of your face, but not really having the long-term view as a lot of these businessmen really is what they are at the end of the day, can have. Because, you know, when you go into a Fortune 500 business, they don't talk about year-to-year goals. They talk about 4 and 5 year goals. And this is what we want to meet 4 years down the road. This is where we want to be 10 years down the road and things like that, and really committing to that. And so I think it's just, it's hard for, you know, fans to, it is hard for fans to grasp that. And that's very, you know, understandable. And I want instant gratification too. I mean, I want to be in the Premier League tomorrow, it's something that we've got to kind of understand and sit back and see how it works. And if it doesn't work, then, you know, then maybe we do go find somebody else. But, with the whole coaching thing and kind of how they've changed courses, and I know it can seem kind of unorganized and things like that, but, you know, I think people should be allowed to change their minds about how they want to do things. I don't think that, you know, with who's available, I think one of Wayne's points was, I think things have changed with how they want to do things because of who's available, how things went with some of the other managers that they did want, and it just didn't work out for one reason or another, for a couple of, particular reasons, really, with the three that turned us down, all for very valid reasons, I think, on our part and on their part, you know, from Nigel Pearson, you know, wanting to bring his backroom staff, and that's understandable. And it's understandable why they wouldn't leave Leicester right now. I mean, why? I'm not sure why you would, in that case. And then, you know, with Steve Clark, you know, wanting more money and us putting our foot down, I think is a good thing. I think that's something, you know, it's something maybe in the past we wouldn't have. We would have tried to make the big splash and try to do something like that, but instead we stood our ground and that didn't work out. And then, with the coach from Sheffield Wednesday coming in, from Birmingham, and wanting his contract guaranteed and there being a payment if he gets sacked. I mean, you know, that's something that just isn't done over there. And so all three reasons I think are pretty valid once you really look at them from a business perspective. You know, and the tough thing is, and it's tough for fans to hear, and it's tough for people to kind of hear this sometimes, but I've always said, and just from being, you know, obviously a much smaller scale than Fulham, just in my time with you know, athletic departments and higher-ups and things like that, is kind of what I've always said is, you know, if you listen to the fans and you bring in the, like Wayne said, the sexy, you know, the sexy kind of splash one, and if you listen to the fans, you're going to end up sitting with the fans. That's kind of what I've always
said. Right.
And so, you know, you've got to do what's best in your business model and things like that. So, you know, I know it's kind of hard for some people to hear that and to understand that, but, you know, there's a lot of things that we don't know. And I think as soon as you can kind of accept that, then, you know, then you just got to have the trust. I think it's really a big thing.
Okay, very good there. Matt, and I guess the dogs agree with you.
Yeah, they. It's early in the morning. There's some joggers.
Not a problem. Not a problem, Matt. And listen, I just want to mention this because, again, this news just came over. I want to say in the last hour, again, we are recording this on a Friday morning here in the U.S., which would be mid-afternoon in England. Sky Sports had a report that Fulham are not interested in Steve Clarke because Steve Clarke just got sacked today by Reading, and according to Sky Sports, they're not going to go back to that. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I understand that. I mean, because of the comments that he said, because of the comments that he said after not getting the job, and kind of some of the reasons that he gave. I mean, I understand. I mean, why would you? You know, sometimes in times like that, people actually speak the truth and really speak their mind, and you kind of find out kind of what their real feelings are. So, you know, why would you want somebody in who doesn't see the same views as the club does?
No, it's a valid point. Again, we're going to have to see how this all plays out with Fulham Football Club. It's a very interesting period. And, you know, again, if you haven't had a chance, please do check out the interview that we did on Thursday night with Wayne Vesey from Football Insider. I find it fascinating. I'm still thinking about it, and I have many fans commenting to me, texting me, messaging me, emailing me about this interview, so it definitely has resonated, and I guess we're going to have to see how it all plays out. But Matt, let's now really get into the show, and let's look back at the Preston North End match, because I really want your thoughts on that. Again, Peter Grant is the interim caretaker, head coach, slash manager, whatever you want to call him. He's in charge right now, and he's got a difficult job to do, and you know, again, we've seen that in the last two matches. He's learning. It seems like he's learning how he goes along in these two matches. You know, again, very difficult spot for him, but definitely want to get your thoughts overall on this 1-1 draw for Fulham against Preston North End.
Well, I think it unfortunately was a little bit more of the same of just inconsistency on how we came out, and you know, you gotta kind of question the decision to play to go back to a diamond 4-4-2, which all of us were so glad to get away from, you know, after last season and kind of how that went. You know, and it was always going to be tough having to probably going through the whole week and having a certain starting 11 in your mind, and then Mantella coming up, you know, late with a back injury and having to throw in Scotty Parker. You know, even though, you know, clearly he's been there and he's, you know, going to fight for the cause and things like that, but just, you know, probably preparing with a certain lineup and then just throwing one little change into that can kind of throw things off from the get-go. And you know, and then having two people in the middle four that really haven't played a whole lot. I've played all season, and you know, and then, you know, on the other side, you know, having some people that haven't played a whole lot. So, you know, it's a tough deal, but we came out in the second half, made some changes. I think you got to give him credit for that. You know, he said, hey, it's not working. We're going to press him higher up the field. You know, it ended up kind of benefiting us. But, you know, Preston came out and looked – I think we made them look pretty good. I think we made them comfortable, which I think at home is just the wrong way to do things. I just don't – I don't really agree with that at home. Is you've got to – they should be uncomfortable. You know, I think we made them kind of comfortable and let them grow into the game and let them grow confidence. And I think we were lucky at the end of the day, probably lucky to get away with a point.
Okay, very interesting take there, Matt. And listen, we're going to be talking about the change of formation, which you mentioned to at the beginning of the second half, in a little bit, because I definitely want to delve into that a little bit deeper, because I think that's a major storyline in this match. But before we get there, I definitely want to break down the team and look at the different positions and how they all fared in this 1-1 draw. And let's start with the goalkeeper. Again, he was tested early, you know, but overall, I wouldn't say he had a terrible amount to do, but again, he did unfortunately give up a goal. Again, just share with me your thoughts overall of goalkeeper Joe Lewis in this match.
I mean, I thought he played okay. I think I agree with you in saying that, you know, it wasn't necessarily, you know, an amazing performance, but I thought he did what he had to do. I think the one goal is down to some individual defending and maybe some even tactical defending on how we defend corners. And, you know, I'm never big on not having players on the post. I think that was said, you know, Gentleman Jim definitely said that.
Sean Davis said that as well.
Yeah, yes. And I'm not a big fan of that. I think that you've got to have people there. There's too many times that you see that and then you say, well, if there's a person on the post, that probably gets taken care of. And that was one of those instances. And so, you know, I think with as much trouble as we've had defending crosses and corners, why would you not – how is that going to help? I don't understand. That's not going to help Joe Lewis at all. So, you know, it's just some interesting kind of tactical decisions. And sometimes – but I will say sometimes there's, you know, there's times that the goalkeeper kind of has an input to those decisions because of what he's comfortable with. I know it, when I was a goalkeeper and when I was playing – you know, ages ago, it was my coach actually said, hey, how would you see this? And we kind of take my input. I liked having players on the post because it meant that I could be more aggressive coming out and playing corners, knowing that I have those people on the post to help me out. But, you know, maybe Joe Lewis, you know, if he does have a say in it, you know, maybe he does say, well, I like a little bit more room to be able to move around and I don't like all the bodies in there and stuff like that. So, you know, you just don't know kind of where those decisions and why those decisions are made, but there are, you know, sometimes players do have input on that, so I wouldn't put it all on the coaching necessarily, unless you absolutely are sure that they're the ones that make, you know, 100% of the decisions without any kind of input from the players. So, you know, but I don't put him at fault for the goal. I think that he made a couple of other decent saves, and, you know, overall, kind of an everyday game, you know, not great. You know, he wasn't a man-of-the-match type performance, but, you know, he definitely wasn't at fault for the goal.
Okay, very good. And, Matt, when we get further into the show, when we go through the segment called You're the Head Coach, I have a funny feeling when I ask you about what would you be working on training, we might be talking about corners.
Yeah, possibly.
Okay, very good. All right, let's move on. Let's break down the play of the fullbacks, but we can also call them wingbacks because in the second half, they switched to a 3-5-2. Share with me your thoughts on how they fared in this match.
Well, I think they were always going to be – in the first half, they were always going to have a hard time because when you play, you know, they called it a 4-4-2, and it was a diamond 4-4-2 because if you watch the shape of the midfielders, and we'll get to that in a second, you know, they never came outside of the outside backs in the first half. So, therefore, they were playing a diamond 4-4-2. And what really where that puts them under a lot of pressure is that they are the closest – they are the widest players that are closest to our attacking goal, and they're our backs. You know, they're our fullbacks. And so it's always going to be pretty difficult for them. And you know, I thought Adam Reach for Preston really, you know, is a very good player on loan from Middlesbrough and really kind of showed his quality. And I think we had some hard, you know, hard times dealing with him, even though I thought Fredericks did an okay job, you know, dealing with him. But, you know, in that kind of formation, I thought that they were always going to be kind of called on to do a lot of both sides of the ball, you know, whereas if you play with wide players in front of them, you know, maybe they're not asked to do as much from the defending side because they don't have to step as high to defend, you know, to be the first player to defend the ball out wide. So, you know, it was always going to be difficult for them, but I thought that, you know, in that, you know, with that said, I thought that they did, you know, a solid job and definitely when they went out to, you know, when they came up and played as wingbacks in the second half, I thought you saw that how much more effective it was, how they just their starting position was higher up the field, which allowed them to press the ball higher up the field, which allowed us to win the ball higher up the field. So it's all kind of a, you know, we talk a lot, you and I have talked a lot on the show about just kind of how the domino effect,
right?
You know, when you're able to to when you're able to start higher up the field, because you are basically, for all intents and purposes, an outside midfielder now, you're higher up the field just from your starting point, and then you're able to win the ball, pressure the ball higher up the field, win the ball higher up the field, and then you're able to kind of get into the attack a little bit more. So I definitely think we saw the advantage of that in the second half.
Okay, very good. And that's going to lead me just to go right back to you about the subject, because, again, we've been talking a great deal about formations. And when the new head coach comes in, you know, I'm hopeful that he will look at this formation, the 3-5-2, moving forward as maybe something that he could use on a regular basis. Because, Matt, when we're looking at the fullbacks, the ones that we have, it seems like they're better suited to play wingbacks, play in a 3-5-2. Am I wrong to think that?
No, I think you're pretty much spot on. I think they like to be higher up the field. You know, I don't think that they are – I think they're good defenders. I think they are, you know, good defensive-minded players, but have a big-time attacking streak in them. They love to get forward. They love to pressure, you know, to pressure teams higher up the field. And I think they kind of – that's you can kind of just tell that they approach that when they're put in those positions. I just feel like they approach that with more energy, which, you know, I've – you know, we kind of go with some of our players about, you know, sometimes when we have to put them maybe in a position where they don't necessarily love it and they'd rather play somewhere else, then they're just not going to put the energy in
right.
know, necessarily that they would put at, you know, when they're at somewhere where they're like, yeah, this is really where I want to play. You know, so I think that they're definitely better suited to be, you know, slightly higher up the field, up to the next level. And I think we definitely saw that in the second half.
You know, and like you have been mentioning, and that's why I'm coming to the conclusion that Mike Gregg has said and David has said, now you're saying, especially this domino effect of the fullbacks, you know, becoming wingbacks and forcing the play up the pitch further, you know, really pressing, plays to our strengths, plays to their strengths. So, again, knock on wood, when the new head coach does come in, he does hopefully consider this formation, because I think it not only plays to the strengths of the fullbacks who could be wingbacks, I think it's also plays to the strengths of the positions we're going to talk about right now, and that's the center backs, because we're going to be talking about basically three of them, two in the first half, but Sean Hutchinson comes on in the second half, Matt, and I definitely want your analysis of this, but I'll just share with you my thoughts. I thought going to three in the back, play to the strengths of not only having the three, which helped out the wingbacks. I also think that it played to the strengths of our center backs. You know, having Stearman to the right, I don't think is such a bad thing, and having Hutchinson in the middle. But really, the one player that I thought really benefited from this switch was our American there. You know, again, Tim Ream seemed to really benefit from going to left, you know, rather than being more central and being in a back three. What are your thoughts about their play, and my thoughts on playing a back three?
I mean, I think you're spot on in terms of, you know, what you just said about moving Tim Ream to maybe what I thought was a more comfortable spot for him. You know, when he plays for the national team, he usually plays left back. I think he's comfortable out there. I think he's a little bit better. I think in a weird way, as compared to being in the center and seeing everything, I think being on that side, I think he sees the field a little bit better. He's a little bit more in tune with seeing the field from that perspective. And, you know, I thought Hutchinson did a very good job. You know, and Stearman is just, I feel like Stearman is really coming on and really getting settled in and just, you know, doing his job and really being the physical fighter and you know, just kind of, you know, the blue collar type guy, and which I think all fans love to see. But I mean, I completely agree that really benefited them as well, not just you know, not just our wing backs, but also our center backs, to be able to have that you know, that extra center back in there to be able to help. And I thought Hutchinson did a very good job. I think that he's a little bit better on the ball from the middle of the field. I think you saw in the first half Tim Ream gave the ball away a couple times in some tricky spots, maybe because he just wasn't really comfortable with not having the outlets that he would have from, you know, that he does have from the wing, and the ability to you know, maybe see some passes that he would normally see from the wing. So, you know, I completely agree. I think that definitely not only did it help out, you know, our fullbacks to be higher up the field, but I think it definitely helped out our center backs to add another one and add a little bit more cover and you know, and just, you know, be able to kind of shut them down and you know, be able to work together. And I think we definitely, again, I think we saw the benefit of it. I think it was just a kind of a different kind of look.
Exactly, you know, and again, that's going to lead me now to talk about the midfield, because again, we have a change there too. It is really this domino effect, because when you change the formation to something that suits many of these players, you could really see the effects, the positive effects. So I want to get your thoughts on the midfield, specifically the players, but also want to talk about the differences in the first half, playing the diamond 4-4-2, and then going to this 3-5-2 when you had three in the middle, playing to the strengths of Tom Kearney, because he's, for me, better centrally, and also playing more to the strengths of Jamie O'Hara, because, again, you know, Peter Grom mentioned this in his comments after the match, that, again, if Matilla played, you probably would have seen O'Hara play more of a dynamic, creative role. He would have been able to go more forward. Instead, he had to sit farther back, obviously. So talk about the play in the first half of the midfield, and I definitely want to get your thoughts of how it changed in the second half with all the players.
Well, I was really disappointed with the center midfielders in the first half. I think that you know, with the late addition, and like you said, the late addition of Scotty Parker kind of changed things. And I actually would have liked to see Scotty Parker actually where Jamie O'Hara played, and then maybe
exactly.
slide some things around and let Jamie O'Hara play slightly more advanced. You know, with the four, you know, do you take Kearney out of the attacking center mid-role? You know, probably not. You probably move O'Hara into one of those wider, I guess, quote unquote, wider center midfielders, you know, on the side of the diamond. But really, I was very disappointed with Kavanaugh. I really didn't think that he was really up to the pace of it. I think Scotty Parker probably can raise his hand too and say, listen, you know, I probably wasn't ready for the pace and that kind of thing as well. You know, just from not having to play as much. I think that's really all it was. I don't think that he's too old. I don't think that he's past it. I don't think it's anything like that. I think it's, you know, he wasn't mentally, he wasn't expecting to start.
Yep.
He got thrown in there at the last minute. He's probably one of the only players that could do as well as he did, being thrown in the last minute. But, you know, I think that maybe kind of threw him for a loop from the get-go. And I think that just that group in particular, you know, when you go back to a formation that wasn't successful, I think from all opinions of, you know, that everybody, you know, everybody probably would have, is that formation for us last year was not successful. And then we go back to it. And so what's going to be the mentality of those players? This is not going to work because it didn't work for us last year. And so, you know, when you deal with that, you're going to deal with, again, with less energy because they have so much negative past experience in that formation that, you know, they're not really confident that that's going to work. And so I think you saw, you know, playing that tight 4-4-2, what that really gives Preston North End, and really where you got to give them credit, is that they always have a wide outlet. If they ever get in trouble in the middle of the field, and, yeah, there's a lot of people in the middle of the field because we played two up front that were tight and then four in the middle that were tight, they always have a wide option. So if they ever get in trouble possession-wise, they know they can always spray it to their outside backs, to their fullbacks, and they'll be able to settle the ball down and get in better positions and then be able to keep the ball a little bit more effectively. You know, and I thought that Kavanaugh didn't do I think probably Parker and Kavanaugh both didn't do maybe an effective enough job of really anticipating play, going to those outside backs so that we could pressure them higher up the field. I think that we depended on McCormick and Dembele to do some running, and they did, but, you know, it's just tough. It's a difficult job to ask of them, you know, to cover 75 yards and, you know, on dead sprints and things like that. So that's just the tough thing with that formation. I thought Kearney showed flashes of absolute brilliance, just dribbling out of pressure and trying to show some nice footwork to get out of pressure and things like that. Definitely showed what he can do. I think there were just too many people in the middle of the field for them to be really effective, you know, building an attack. And when you have to connect two and three passes before your fullbacks can get into the attack and give you some width, then that's really going to slow you down and make you a little bit more easy to defend.
Okay, very good, Matt. And it's funny because I said this to Giannis, and I used a hockey analogy we use here in Boston when we talk about Bruins players that aren't really cutting their weight, or basically cutting the mustard. I shouldn't say weight, cutting the mustard. We call them passengers. And, you know, again, Sean Kavanaugh was a passenger, meaning that he was not, you know, he was not really in the flow of the match. You know, again, you know, he's a young player. I still think he has a bright future. I just think that he's been put in this very difficult situation. And, you know, again, it's unfortunate. I want him to, you know, I want this player to really be a part of Fulham's future. But I think these last two matches have not helped him, Matt. And, you know, again, we're being honest here. He just hasn't cut the mustard so far.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, especially just in the first half and, you know, obviously, you know, getting subbed out at halftime kind of tells the story that, you know, he was the one that they were willing to sacrifice in order to go into that to that formation. When typically, just from a match fitness standpoint, you would have thought that it would have been Scott Parker.
Right.
But, you know, with you know, Parker being the better of the two in the first half, and at least Parker gave us a little bit of energy. And like you know, Sean and Gentleman Jim said on the webcast, it was or on the commentary, is that, you know, at least Parker would get stuck in and commit a foul. I mean, at least he would show enough energy and effort to at least commit a foul and slow the play down and things like that. So, you know, I just didn't think that he was really up for it, which was disappointing. But, you know, like you said, he is a young player, and you know, I hope he can improve. But I'm not sure how these last two matches are going to help his confidence.
Okay, very good. And you've already touched on it a little bit, but before we move on, I definitely want to just rack your brain just a little bit more about the differences of having three central midfielders compared to the two before. How much of a change was it for someone like Jamie O'Hara and, of course, Kearney? Because you said Kearney was phenomenal in the second half. So just talk about that a little bit.
Well, I think from a simple standpoint, it gives them more room. I think that, I mean, just from an obvious number standpoint, how many bodies are in the middle of the field, I think it gives them more room to operate. It's a little bit more of a traditional, I guess, formation with three center midfielders, especially in these days. You know, the players coming up, they're used to playing in that kind of formation. It gives them a little bit more freedom to do some things, and it probably defined roles a little bit better, you know, in terms of kind of what they're supposed to do and what they're comfortable doing. You know, it allowed them to play to their strengths a little bit more and to really almost make defending simpler, because when you're up a man in the center midfield, there still is some communication for, okay, which one of us is going to be free? You know, everybody wants to be the free player because they want to be able to start the counterattack, but they can't all be the free player. But when you're 3v3 in the middle of the field, it's a little simpler to say, okay, now we know we all have to defend. Like, there's no question, there's actually less communication that has to go on in terms of passing players on and things like that. It just becomes a little bit more simpler for the players and you know, allows them to be able, really be able to relax and kind of play to what their strengths are. And, yeah, I thought Tom Kearney was fantastic. You know, didn't really step too many feet wrong, you know, and really opened up the game with giving them wide outlets. It gave them more options going forward, so we were able to develop attacks and develop counterattacks. And, you know, again, it's something that's a formation we've been successful in. So it's kind of the flip side of going from a formation where maybe they don't have a whole lot of confidence in that formation, the 4-4-2, going to a formation where they have had, you know, past experiences where they have been successful. So therefore they're going to have a lot more confidence in there. And that really plays, I think that plays a big role.
Okay. Very good. Very interesting. All right. Let's talk about the strikers up front. We're talking about Moussa Dembele, Ross McCormack, and for a limited amount of time, Matt Smith. How did they fare?
I thought Dembele worked his socks off. I know that there's a lot of talk about, is he staying or is he going with the change of agents and kind of the change of tune with him having that contract in front of him, maybe having his first name on it but not his full name on the contract or something. But I think he worked his socks off. Defensively, he was chasing down balls. He was, you know, chasing the lost cause, even a ball that I think everybody knew was going out of bounds. You still see him sprinting all the way to the line to try to keep it in, you know, and I think that, you know, when you have a player like that, that, you know, even if all he's doing is putting himself in the shop window and trying to show well, we're still going to benefit from that club. And so I don't think that there's necessarily a bad thing that can come from it, as long as the relationship stays healthy with him, between him and the club. With Ross, I think we saw in the first half, I think we saw a little bit more of the old Ross, where he was really coming way too deep. He was having to defend fullbacks, though. I saw him pick a ball up, you know, in the first half. He was maybe 30 yards from our goal. You know, and it wasn't him getting the ball past him, it was him winning a ball. And I just don't think that's where Ross McCormick has been is very effective. And you and I have talked about that a number of times, is that he's at his best when he's in the channels and really pressing higher up the field. You know, but when he's trying to kind of play the Wayne Rooney-ish role, if you will, kind of the box-to-box forward, which just isn't what he does best and kind of throws off what everybody else does defensively. I think it really put him in a tough situation to have to chase down fullbacks and have to, you know, even track them into the defensive third. So I think that was going to be a tough deal for him. Obviously, magical free kick to score the goal, you know, and that's something that Ross definitely has in his locker. And I think that, you know, when he's on point with those things, then we're going to be in a lot of games because we're going to be dangerous on free kicks in and around the box, even though we probably should have had, you know, maybe four or five more of them from some questionable refereeing decisions. You know, I thought that he took that chance and you're not going to see a whole lot better free kicks than that. And so, you know, you definitely got to give him credit there because in the second half, I felt like he was higher up the field and he was a little bit more effective and more effective defensively because he had less on his plate.
Okay, fantastic. You just basically answered the question I was just about to come back to you, you know, talking about did he stay more up front in the second half, and you just answered it because that was what I was going to ask about the change of formation. So obviously, again, the domino effect. The formation worked to the benefit of Ross McCormack up front and probably Moussa Dembele as well. Everyone just has a really good defined role and plays to their strengths. That's why I keep going back to this 3-5-2, 5-3-2, whatever it morphs into. I really hope the new man who comes in, whoever that is, really takes a stern look at it, because I think it's something that they could use on a regular basis. They could tweak it. They could go away from it on certain occasions. But I think that they should be using it as frequently as they need to, because I even in this upcoming match against Nottingham Forest, I was already thinking about that because I saw how Nottingham Forest, Matt, struggled against Bristol City. Guess what? Bristol City play a 3-5-2. They lost 2-0 to Bristol City. I'm thinking that's the only other team that really features the 3-5-2 a great deal. Maybe Fulham need to do that in this next match. I hope Peter Grant has thought about that, because it really was effective for Bristol City against Nottingham Forest. But I'm jumping ahead. We'll talk about that match next week. All right, Matt, let's now go down to coaching situations. I've already kind of talked about this one, but let's start here. What were your thoughts on changing the formation at the beginning of the second half and bringing on Sean Hutchinson? Based on everything that we talked about, you were totally for this.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely was. I think it was definitely a positive move. I think it gives a positive, kind of lift to the players, you know, and I think that a coach coming in and at halftime and saying, hey, listen, what we worked on, listen, that's just not working, let's go to this. I think that kind of, even shows the players that, you know, he has a confidence that he can put it on him. You know, the manager can say, listen, I put you guys in the formation that where you're going to be a little bit more maybe not as confident in, and so let's just go back to what we did well. And I think that can be a big lift to the players. And again, just, you know, being able to press the ball higher up the field is so huge for us. We've seen how effective we are when we do that, and so it's always surprising to me when we go away from stuff like that. You know, whether it's a straight 4-4-2 and having wingers, or if it's the 3-5-2 that we went into, I think that just the positive notion of being able to pressure the ball higher up the field and you know, kind of, you know, to have a true, you know, you don't really want to call him a sweeper. He is a third center back, but Hutchinson come in and play very effectively and just to make changes to kind of change, you know, something had to change. And, you know, so what he did is, I thought, very positive, and I think that we definitely saw the fruits of that.
Okay, very good. And when we get on to our next segment, when you're the head coach, I definitely want to get your thoughts about the change of formation and when you would have made it, because, again, I don't want to spoil that. We'll get to that, because I definitely want your thoughts on how you would have handled the overall game management. But before we do that, again, another coaching situation I want to give you. Did Peter Grant wait too long to bring on Matt Smith? Matt Smith came on late in the match, I want to say about the 75th minute. I was talking with Emilio on this. He thought he should have come on earlier. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think the big question is when did Scott Parker start to look, tired, start to look, a little heavy legged. So I think it was more about when was it time to bring Scott Parker off? Should we have done that earlier as compared to bringing on Matt Smith? Kind of just same question, different way kind of thing.
Yep.
Of thinking. And, I think that Matt Smith, when if you're trying to win a game, and trying to chase a result, whether it's to equalize or to get the winning goal, I think Matt Smith is a very good option. I think, giving him 15 minutes, you just wonder kind of, when is he going to really start to get in the flow of the game? It's probably going to take him 10 minutes to get in the flow, which only leaves him 5 minutes to really be kind of effective. And it changes the way we play. We've talked about that a lot. It changes the way kind of that we approach the game when Matt Smith comes on the field, just because he's a different kind of player, likes different kind of service, and kind of constitutes different things. So, I do think that he probably should have brought on, maybe you bring him on 10 minutes earlier, and give him kind of the last third of the match to be able to get into it. And then maybe he's got 25 minutes or 15 minutes to really affect the game a little bit more, because I think, the more balls that you get into Matt Smith, I think the more he becomes effective, because it starts to wear on defenders when they've got to deal with the same kind of ball over and over again, especially with somebody who's effective in the air, and somebody who's going to challenge absolutely everything in the air. So that can be kind of, can get kind of tiresome for some of the defenders can be. Basically, it's more effective as the game goes on. The longer he's in there, the more effective he's going to be because of that kind of stuff. So, I probably think maybe 10 or 15 more minutes probably would have done, probably would have made, a good effect. And maybe, from looking at it, somebody who hasn't played all season in a game, maybe 60 minutes is kind of the mark that you kind of set of, hey, we'll give him 60 minutes and kind of see where he is. And maybe they thought that Scott Parker could give him 15 more minutes. But, I thought that the change was still a positive one. Unfortunately, it didn't affect the result, but I thought that you saw in the last 5 or 6 minutes that he was much more effective. And you just wonder, that's when you go back and you second guess, well, what if you would have brought him
right
on earlier? Would he have been effective earlier? Would that have changed things?
No, very good point. It's twofold. Again, you have a player that has not played in a very long time in Scott Parker, and that maybe 60 minutes would have been better for him, because maybe he'd be fading further you went into the match. Then you have Matt Smith, because you're thinking he could have more of an influence on the game the more time he has. So if he only has 15 minutes, you mentioned 10 minutes in, it takes him just to get into the flow, and then by that time you're only talking 5 minutes plus stoppage time. So maybe that's one of the reasons why maybe second-guessing, should have brought him on earlier, potentially 60 minutes in. That's where I fall on that. All right, Matt, let's now move on to our new segment. I look forward to going through this with you. And it's simply going to be called You're the Head Coach. Again, we're going to be looking at Fulham as you are the head coach. You're the man in charge. I want you to think of it as this is your job. So let's look at it this way. All right, Matt, let's start here. You're the head coach. What would be your analysis of your game management in the Preston North End match?
Well, one of the beautiful things about the game, and one of the difficult things about the game, is that you don't have timeouts. If you would have given me a timeout 15 minutes in, I would have made the change then. I think coming into it, obviously with the wrench thrown in with Matilla going down late, not him not being able to go, affected things, and maybe that's when you make the change. And so, I think that the management at halftime was definitely a positive one. I think that's good managing. Being able to kind of, look at it objectively and say, I made the wrong call there, and I'm going to change things, and we're going to try to change things from a positive standpoint. But again, if I'd have had a timeout, I'd have called it about the 15 minute mark, because it was clear to me 15 minutes in that this is not going to be we're not going to be very effective, and this is not going to be a positive thing for us. And so, at that point, as a manager, all you're trying to do is you're saying, okay, we're struggling here a little bit. Can we get to the halftime? Can we get to halftime 0-0 at worst? Can we only be one goal down? From that side, I think that's something you just got to sit out. And that's the tough thing as a coach, because you can't, with only having 3 substitutes, you obviously can't make a change 15 minutes into a substitute, because if you could need things later on in the game. There could be injuries, there could be red cards, whatever. So you've got to kind of play that as it goes. But, you know, it's that's probably the toughest thing about managing a club is you don't have timeouts. And, you know, as much as I wish we did, you almost wish you could kind of just stop the game and say, okay, I already see this. And I'm sure Peter Grant probably already saw, okay, this probably isn't working. We're going to have to make a change at halftime. He probably saw that pretty early. And so that was probably already going on in his mind. And so, you know, but he took it on the chin. And at halftime, I'm sure he probably said, listen, guys, we're going to make a change. This is a positive change. Let's go get the game. You know, we can definitely go get a result here. So let's go do this. And the players definitely responded. So, you know, from that point of view, you got to give them a positive. But on the negative side, I think coming out with that kind of game plan, maybe it just didn't look as flowing and it didn't seem as organized. And I think that's something that was a little bit of a downer with having a whole week to prepare for this match. You kind of go, you know, how are you not organized from a week full of training? It's not like these kids, and it's not like these players have other things to do. All they're doing is training and film and scouting and things like that. How are you not organized from that point of view, from the get-go, from the start of the game, you've got to say, you know, it probably wasn't great, but the positive move at halftime, you definitely got to give him credit for that.
Okay, very good. And Matt, just to let you know, Peter Grant after the match and the reaction that was actually his reaction on the Fulham website, he mentioned 15 minutes in, he knew at that point that he needed to make a change. I'm paraphrasing, but he said 15 minutes in, he knew. So that goes back to what you were just discussing. It's funny, you said 15 minutes in, you knew. So what do you do at that point? You talked about the timeout situation. And you brought up a very good argument because we were talking about, well, why doesn't he make the change now? We've seen managers do it. But you described it as it's more difficult than just making the change because you also have to factor in the three substitutes you have when you're doing it and managing the game. So it sounds like to me you understand why he did not make that change 15 minutes in.
Yeah, I mean, because it's as a manager and kind of that 15 minute mark is a key one. The first 15 minutes of each half are key kind of points and really as kind of the way that a lot of coaches approach it, you basically break the game down into six different 15 minute segments. Okay, how do we do in the first 15 minutes? Then we evaluate there. Middle 15, can we get through that? And then the last 15 of the first half, you know, what can we do just to kind of get to halftime kind of thing? And so that's kind of, you know, just some key moments in the match of, okay, let's evaluate the first 15 minutes and see kind of what that is. But, no, I mean, I completely agree. You know, it's funny that you say that because I'd actually hadn't seen the manager reaction. So it's funny that he kind of saw that too. And it is difficult. You got to kind of weigh the pros and cons and there's definitely been matches that I've been in that I've said, okay, 15 minutes in, whoa, man, if we can just get to halftime, then we'll make some changes kind of thing.
Okay, very good, very good. All right, let's move on. Second part, you're the head coach. What would you be looking to change for the next match with potential changes to your team selection, what you might say to the players, and also what you might be doing tactically?
I think what we saw is when you put the players into a positive formation of which they're confident in, that you've got to see that and learn from that and say, okay, that's going to work for us. That's kind of what these guys kind of feed off of. And you know, I think we're going to stick with that. And so, you know, when you make a positive change like that, they're probably going to drill that into their heads this week. But what I would do is show them the first 15 minutes of the second half and say, hey guys, this is how good we were in the first 15 minutes of the second half. Look how much higher we're pressing up the field. This is why we're sticking with this. And just fill their heads with positive stuff. Almost throw away that first half of film. I mean, don't even let them see that because it's not really what you want to see. You've got to learn from, you know, you learn from the negatives a lot of times more than you do the positives. But I think that this team right now probably needs, more positive reinforcement than the opposite. So, you know, that's definitely what I would do. And then potential team changes, you know, I think that you probably, you know, does Scott Parker retain his place? You know, who knows? You know, can LVC kind of recover from his knock that he picked up in the international break a couple of weeks ago? You hope that he can, and maybe he can play another part. You know, and so I would see us sticking with the same formation. I think the tactics need to be more positive. I know going away from home it may be a little bit different, but like you said, the simple scouting report is there. You know, Bristol City plays that formation and was very successful. So I don't see why you would necessarily change your tactics from the second half and going into tomorrow.
Okay, and as you know, again, I'm having you project a starting 11. You don't know what the injury situation is. Again, Peter Grimm mentioned that there are several players that weren't fully fit the entire week. I believe Richard Stearman has been out for the week. Moussa Dembele, I think, was held out for at least one training session. And I want to say Tom Kearney was as well. Again, I would have to go back to the team news. But would you be making major changes to what the starting 11 was? Well, not the starting 11, what the 11 was to start the second half? Or is there something else that you might do differently for this match?
I think if you have another center midfielder healthy, I think Scott Parker probably is back on the bench.
Okay.
You know, is he more effective probably coming in and be able to play and be able to add energy in like the last 30 minutes of the match or be able to kind of hold and really kind of solidify things in the middle as compared to being a starter? I think that's probably something that you look at. I think that, you know, other than that, as long as people are healthy, I think that that's probably the team you're going to see with maybe that one change. And, you know, is LVC healthy? Is Matilla able to shake off the knock that he took? You know, that kind of thing. And so I think if there was one option to change, and again, we don't know the options because of the injury situation from week to week, but if there is an option there, I think you probably take, that's probably the one you would take if there was one.
Okay, very good. All right, Matt, let's now get to it. It's training this week. You're the head coach. What would you focus on in training this week to prepare for this upcoming game against Nottingham Forest?
Well, I think the first thing that you approach is dealing with crosses and corner kicks, because I think that's something that on a day-to-day basis that would be something that I approach every day in some way, shape, or form. Whether it's a certain exercise where you're literally just taking reps of defending corners, whether it's different kind of exercises, a small-sided possession game where, you know, the players have to play it wide and the ball has to be crossed in so you get it more out of the flow of play type of thing. Or whether it's an 11v11 type of thing, maybe against the U21s or something like that. I think that you add different types of aspects of that into each training session, because I do think that it can get a little bit monotonous if all you do is put a bag full of balls out on the wing and say, all right, defend these 20 crosses. That's something that can kind of get monotonous. So I think what you've got to do is you've got to try to train that without letting the players know that that's what you're training. I think that that's kind of a key is to kind of just keep it fresh for them, keep them on their toes and to kind of just change things up every once in a while, but still work on the same thing and still try to sharpen that stuff up. And then from there, I think just the counterattacking movement, I think, is a big thing too. And just really working on, games where, exercises where, you are in positions where you have to transition quickly from attack to defense and from defense to attack, because those are always the key moments in the game. It never fails that we always look back at it. A lot of the key moments of the game are transition points, because there's really only three or four kind of moments in a game. There's transition moments, so from attack to defense, defense to attack. There's when you have possession, when the other team has possession, and then there's set pieces. So there's really only four moments in the game if you really break it down like that. So if you can really kind of hone in on those transition moments, which is a lot of the time. I mean, look at how many times during a game that a ball is turned over for one reason or another. I think you probably have more moments of transition than you do anything else. So I think to make those sharper, looking to get the ball wide early, and really work on forward movement and really combination play through the middle of the field and really trying to get forward quickly. So I think that those are probably some of the things that I would really hone in on. And then really something that we did, that I did with my team this year and that really really helped us out is really as soon as the session is done, okay, it's not really done. You've got to defend four corners and you've got to attack four corners. And, then you come up with punishments or make a game out of it kind of thing.
Right.
So just so you can get some of the competitive juices flowing still right there at the end of training, can kind of, you know, you can keep it light, you can keep it fun, but it's still, kind of, you know, it's a competitive atmosphere, and that's something that I think may help us towards the end of games. If you can kind of simulate a competitive situation at the end of a training session, then you can simulate a competitive situation at the end of matches. And so it's kind of, it can kind of lean itself to help in two situations at once.
No, very good. And it's funny because while you were saying that, I was thinking about my time playing basketball and in practices, just free throw shooting. And if I missed, the whole team had to run suicide sprints. And again, that was, you know, a situation where the pressure's on because it teaches you about pressure situations. You don't want to miss because everyone has to run. And, you know, it's good to do situations like that. And I'm sure that that also transfers to the football pitch, Matt. You know, I'm sure, you know, when you coach your team, you've already talked about a little bit about that. You're trying to simulate tough situations and see how your team responds to them.
Yeah, and I think it's important to do that at the end of training sessions, and because it's important to do it at the end of games. And so if you have a 90-minute training session, that's just like simulating, and I know there's a lot more breaks and things like that in training, but still the fatigue is there, but they're still in the same mindset, okay, when I'm fatigued, I've still got to compete and be in this pressure kind of situation. And so I think that's something that can definitely help, you know, in this situation, similar, not exactly the same, but similar kind of situations, and, you know, in the last 15 minutes of a game, okay, yeah, we've been trained to be mentally sharp and physically sharp the last 15 minutes of a 90-minute training session. Therefore, we're going to be mentally sharp and physically sharp or sharper and, you know, the last 15 minutes of a 90-minute match.
Okay, very good. Very interesting way that you approach things, Matt. Again, I'm fascinated by the coaching end of this. That's why I'm glad that we do this show. Before we wrap this up, any final thoughts about the show today or anything you want to talk about, Fulham?
You know, just with the, you know, with the club situation, and I know it can look like a little bit of a circus, and you know, with the coach situation, that kind of constantly evolving. I, you know, a lot of people say, oh, they're just kind of flying by the seat of their pants and things like that. And, you know, but I think that you've got to do that, and you do that in life. I think that when you go to people and their everyday jobs, you know, not everything's written in stone. You know, you're not saying this is the way we're going to do it, right, wrong, and different, no matter who's available. No matter what's going to happen, we're going to make a square peg fit into a round hole, even if we, you know, even if we have to, because the you know, the square hole is what we have, and we're not going to change that, and we're going to be very rigid. Instead of being able to evolve and change, be able to change your mind. I mean, I think people do that every day. I think if you look at yourself in everyday life, you change your mind probably five different times during the day of what you're going to do. You know, and so to really kind of ridicule the club for changing their course of action as things kind of progress and as variables change, I think it's kind of, you know, at times can be a little bit hypocritical from a fan standpoint. And so, you know, I think we've got to see kind of what they're doing and just try to take the positives from it. Because I think if all we do is beat them down, I think it's going to be, it can create kind of a mob atmosphere. And I don't think that's what we need at the club. I think we need a very positive, uplifting atmosphere and you know, kind of all, you know, fans do our part to really lift our, you know, to lift ourselves out of this and really just support the players and you know, understand that the front office is going to try to do, that the front office at the end of the day has the best of intentions for the club. They're not trying to make this a circus. They're not trying to make us the laughingstock of the championship. I mean, if anybody who thinks that is foolish. I mean, obviously, those guys have a job to do, and it's a very difficult job to do. They're trying to find the right person and, you know, trying to find the person that fits the right mold for them. And let's make sure that we get a square peg to go in our square hole, you know, or if we have to change to a round hole and put a round peg in, then so be it. As long as we can solidify ourselves and kind of go along this shaky part and really kind of it builds into a solid foundation to where we want to move forward from, then at the end of the day, that's going to be positive for the club.
Okay, very interesting take there at the very end of the show, Matt. And, you know, my approach is just, you know, again, let's just see how this all plays out, you know. And like you mentioned, that obviously the club wants to push forward, and let's see how that they go about their business right now. It's their business. They have to figure this out, and let's see if they can figure it out, and hopefully they will. All right, Matt, again, I've already said this, but before we wrap it up, I believe you and your lovely wife Heather are going to England. What matches are you going to be seeing, and when are you leaving?
We leave next Wednesday. We will be at the Brentford match and Ipswich match at home, and then we're actually going to Bolton away. So we'll be at all three matches. After this match, we'll be at the next three matches. So if anybody is around, find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, and definitely love to meet up with people and discuss Fulham.
That's great. And I was going to mention that, again, please do contact Matt, if you want to go and say hello to Matt. If you've been on cottagersconfidential.sbnation.com, when I post the show, you'll see a picture of Matt and his lovely wife, Heather, and myself. That's the three of us. We met over the summer. But definitely, if you get a chance, go say hi to Matt and Heather. Please do check them out. Do just go and introduce yourself. They're fans just like you guys are. And I've met both Matt and Heather. They are wonderful fans of Fulham Football Club. And Matt, I wish you both a wonderful trip.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. I hope the weather's okay. And yeah, if anybody comes up and says hi, that'd be great. And, even if you want to come and have a debate and don't agree with kind of what my view is, I love debate. I just love talking Fulham. And, I think that, to have a debate about something is perfectly fine. And, people are going to have different opinions and everything like that. So it's always fun either way.
Okay. And just tell everyone how that they can reach out to you on Twitter.
My Twitter handle is at TNUKeep. So I was a goalkeeper at Trevecca Nazarene University, so TNU keep and then the number one. And I'll retweet a lot of your stuff so everybody can kind of see those that kind of stuff, and I'll be tweeting you guys and stuff like that so everybody can find me.
Okay, very good. And I always wondered what that stood for, so now you've cleared that up. I was like, what is TNU keep one stand for? Thank you for finally clearing up that was the mystery of this show. You've now clarified the mystery. Okay,
glad
great, Matt. Well, listen, thank you as always for doing this show. Before we go, just remember you can download Cottage Talk on iTunes and on the Stitcher Radio app, which is available on the iPhone, iPad, and the Android. Also, you can listen to Cottage Talk on the TuneIn app, which is available at most app stores for your mobile device. Well, that's going to do it for the 13th episode of the Coaching Corner with Matt Smith. For Matt, I'm Russ Coleman. Thank you as always for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, Matt.
Cheers, Russ.
Boys and girls, London calling.